This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Here's the question we are asking today. Why is it that no one wants to talk about guns when we beat every other subject to death? The only one locally, of course, is developer John Rosenthal, who puts up those dramatic stop handgun violence billboards around town. But think of it, just recently, 12 people gunned down in a Colorado movie theater, another 6 at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, 3 more at Texas A&M this week. And then just take a look at Boston's homicide record if you go to boston.com. Of the 30 murders posted on boston.com, by the way, there have been more than 30 murders, so I don't know why there's only 30 posted. But of those 30, 19 were by gun. And I've said it before, I'm going to say it here again, there's only one reason to own a gun. It is to kill people. Forget about hunting. Most guns are not for hunting animals. They are for hunting people. So why do discussions give politicians the shudders? I mean, one theory is it is all about the all-powerful NRA and the old Second Amendment argument. I don't know, but it's a subject that no one gloms onto. We're going to talk today to Richard Feldman. He's a former lobbyist for the National Rifle Association. He's now president of the Independent Firearms Association, which is based out of New Hampshire. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here today.
Are you actually relieved that no one talks about it?
No, I'm always happy to talk about the issue. You know, it's a tougher time to talk about it, and, you know, right after a tragedy like these. But that's when people talk about issues, when the tragedy occurs. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, there's a tragedy every day. I mean, we just had this one here in Boston. 3 young women gunned down sitting in a car on, you know, Harlem
Absolutely.
Street here. I mean, it was
And
horrible.
In fact, that's the far more common kind of misuse of a gun is in a crime-related situation with one or two people. This is an anomaly, what happened out both in Wisconsin and in Colorado, and yet it's the anomaly that forces us to look at what can we do about the most difficult aspect of firearm misusage, which is when a lunatic gets a gun, and it's not about crime, it's not about theft or holdup or domestic anger, it's just craziness.
Yeah, and the lunatic scenario, though, is very few and far between. That's almost setting those aside. I hate to say that, but both the Colorado incident
and
the
Sikh,
the more common one is what happened right here. That was a targeted murder. Here's a couple things I have for you and the NRA. First of all, this whole notion that, I mean, you know, we have a federalist system, so states make up their own rules, but
sort of.
Should I know?
We used to anyway.
I know, but gun accessibility, you know, varies so dramatically state by state. There's some, you know, really shocking statistics here in Massachusetts. Just last year, the state recovered 1,700 firearms. About 1,000 of those were traceable, and of those, only 351 of them originated in Massachusetts. So the majority were from nearby New Hampshire and Maine.
That's not surprising at all.
Yeah, but we have no control over that. New Hampshire, anybody can buy a gun anyhow, anywhere, anytime, in like 10 minutes or
less.
Well,
that's not accurate either. The same requirements for long guns pretty much apply here in New Hampshire as across the United States, and that's the federal system. That was called the Brady Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And when you buy a firearm from a dealer, you go through a point-of-purchase background check, which uses the NICS system run by the FBI. So everyone buying a gun lawfully in that manner is going through a check. When you start saying, well, what about people that don't buy them lawfully? Well, let's you know, that's an issue. If you ask the question correctly, there is almost universal agreement between pro-gun advocates and anti-gun people. We all want to keep guns out of the hands of violent, predatory criminals and mental incompetents. And if you ask the question right, you get agreement. Why don't we focus on the problem instead of arguing about little aspects of it?
Well, we have no way of controlling who buys a gun, because somebody with a clean record can be buying a gun. But here's the issue. Is there any kind of gun control that the NRA supports?
Well, the Brady Law was actually rewritten by the NRA. Of course there is. The problem is our terminology. When you use the term gun control, that means different things to different people in this debate. Pro-gun people hear that terminology, and what they hear is laws meant to prevent me, the legitimate citizen, from obtaining guns I want that I don't misuse. And I used to think, before I was involved with firearms, I would have told you 40 years ago, well, every reasonable person supports gun control. How can you not? But I interpreted the term the way millions of people still do, meaning keeping guns out of the hands of those who shouldn't obtain them, which we both sides of the debate, are in agreement. There is no debate at that level.
Does the NRA have a proposal for how to do that?
Well, the Brady Law was a heck of a start. It did stop criminals from buying guns from legitimate sources. The problem is there are 500,000 guns stolen in this country every year. With that level of theft of firearms, how you can clamp down on every legitimate source, you can require law-abiding citizens to go through a battery of psychologists, psychiatrists. What difference does it make?
Do we really believe that they're stolen? Did you really believe that? I don't believe it. I don't believe that they're stolen.
500,000 guns?
People are probably selling them or giving them away. I mean, they may report them as stolen. I don't believe it.
Well,
that's
from Duke University economics professor and those statistics.
That would be like half the people who have a gun have it stolen? I don't know.
Half the people? What are you talking about? There are 110, 15, 20 million people in this country that own guns. One half of 1% of the or so of the people who own guns have a theft every year? That's correct.
Mm, well, it sounds awfully convenient.
One half of 1% of the people possessing a gun will have a gun stolen from them this year. That's correct.
Okay, here, Richard. Here's one of the issues here. Why the NRA pushes other things that seem to be more logical, like the conceal and carry laws or the stand your ground law. Why? I mean, it's one thing. I mean, everybody's conceded the Second Amendment thing. You know, knock yourselves out. Buy your guns. I mean, that's fine. But why take
that
second step?
Well, I don't know that everyone conceded it, but I know
the Supreme Court has ruled on it.
Certainly has ruled on it.
Yeah.
That's usually the end of the line, unless you're going to go.
The Supreme Court has ruled on it. They shot down that Chicago handgun law, you know, a few years ago.
Well, it's the D.C., and then it made the states applicable to federal law through the Chicago. Yes. Mm-hmm.
But why? Why go the extra? Why push for those things too? It's not just that you're opposing gun control, but it's almost like it increases the prevalence of guns.
Well, let's deal with the stand your ground first. You know, there's certainly post Trayvon Martin a hell of a lot of discussion about the stand your ground law. I've reviewed the situation as carefully as I can without being privy to the information that's not public. And the only person, it appears to me, that had a right to stand his ground was Trayvon Martin. Whatever George Zimmerman did or didn't do, that was never an issue of stand your ground for him. It was for Trayvon Martin. I think the real question there is, why are white people in the suburbs so frightened to see a black young adult walking in their neighborhood with a hoodie? And that leads us back to the issue of the gangbangers and lookalikes, and the response that people get from seeing someone that looks like they're a bad guy.
All right. I mean, we're confusing things here because obviously Trayvon Martin was not armed. I'm talking to Richard Feldman, the former lobbyist for the National Rifle Association.
No, he wasn't. He might have been much better off had he been.
Yeah, he probably would have been.
How much worse could he have been?
I've heard that argument as well. I've heard that argument. I mean, you know.
Now, clearly, I think
that's part of the argument, that everybody would be better off if everybody was armed.
Well, I don't agree with that, no. To me, it's a freedom. It's not about the gun. I don't think anyone disagrees, maybe they do, that you have an absolute right to use deadly force when confronted with immediate deadly force. That's black-letter law all across the country. Of what value is having a right if the government effectively denies you the means to enforce that right? That leads down a discussion about carrying concealed, but it's not about stand your ground. By the time you realize you're in immediate danger, it's generally too late to withdraw. Now, George Zimmerman, that's a whole nother, what he did or didn't do or should have done or shouldn't have done, we'll find out in good time.
Okay, I want to get back.
It's really not much of a, there's not much difference.
I want to get back on track here, Richard, because I really am fascinated by the National Rifle Association itself. Why politicians are so fearful? Why there's this shudder factor? Why no one wants to push back? Is it all about the money? Are they afraid the NRA isn't going to give them money? They're going to lobby the other opponents? I'm looking at the statistics in front of me. I mean, the amount of money that comes from your lobbying, your ex-lobbying association to current politicians is staggering.
You know, the maximum you can give under federal election law to a candidate is $5,000 in the primary, $5,000 in the general. Believe me, you can't even rent a congressman for $5,000, let alone buy him. It's not the money. What people are upset when they're upset with the NRA and
they can give to the parties. They can get more than that, but go ahead.
The parties can. The NRA is not a party.
No,
it's a political action committee.
Yeah, but they can give to a party. They can give more than $5,000 to a party.
Yes, yes. The NRA can give to a party, sure, but not to the candidate's campaign.
I understand.
What people object to, it's called democracy. If you like the outcome, boy, isn't that great. But if you disagree with the outcome, well, that group has too much power because they use the tools in a democracy to organize, communicate, motivate, and encourage their people to be concerned about this issue. You know, they just do a better job than almost anybody else. But that's hardly fair to say they do something wrong. In fact,
I didn't say they did anything wrong. I'm not saying they did anything wrong.
I'm saying some people who don't like it. If you take the money out of politics, NRA would be 10 times stronger than it is today.
I'm asking you a serious question.
Because it's not the money.
If it's not the money, all right.
Of course not.
All right, it's not the money. Why won't politicians? I think the only person I've ever seen come out is Frank Lautenberg. I don't think I've ever seen anybody, you know, jump up after. I mean, it's always, you know, after one of these horrible incidents. But there's nobody beating the drum. There's nobody, not one person.
Well, why should they? What is he proposing to outlaw that isn't already illegal? What is it that the other side wants? We'll call it double secret probation. It's illegal to shoot people. Now we really mean it. We're going to really make it illegal. And if you shoot more than one, it'll be another crime, multiple shooting crime. What is it that we're trying to outlaw that isn't illegal?
Handguns. Handguns, I think. High capacity magazines.
What would be a good number? Tell me. What's an appropriate?
I don't know, but you know the guy in the movie theater, James Holmes. He had 100 rounds in that gun.
Give me a number.
He had 100 rounds.
Okay,
you know,
like 99?
People might have been able to get out of that movie theater if he had had to stop and reload. I mean, he already did stop and reload.
If he had a 45 instead of a 223,
I know, I've heard you say
there'd be a lot more dead people than there are. Would that be a good thing? Because he had a smaller.
Well, those are handguns.
He had two handguns.
No,
and they were much
we just
more
said
lethal.
I just said maybe handguns is something we should ban, and
high capacity
magazines.
Back in 1976, that was tried. It was called Citizens versus Handguns. It was run by the sheriff of Middlesex County, John J. Buckley, I knew John Buckley very well. It destroyed his political career. Because it was one of the first fights in the country on guns. And the gun owners actually...
You're making my point for me. Politicians are terrified to bring up this
point. Of the people. Who should they be terrified of? They should be terrified of the people. When they do something to the people do not want, they ought to be terrified of them about getting thrown out of office. And gun owners have been very active. They organize. They do what you're supposed to do in a democracy. They organize, they communicate, they get out to the polls and vote. It's not money that votes. It's educated, informed, ticked off gun owners that when the gun issue is high visibility, will come out and vote on that issue alone. And that's what people sometimes don't understand, because you can look at the polls. And I'm certain right now, if you did a national poll on a 100-round magazine, I bet you you'd get 80% plus of the American people to say, it's okay to ban it.
Exactly.
After all, they don't own one, so it's easy to ban something you don't own.
Right.
People in Manhattan would like to ban cars in Manhattan because they're not relying on it.
I'm not for banning anything, really. I think the manufacturing is a problem. I mean, we allow manufacturing of stuff that we probably shouldn't. But you can't go to that.
Me,
it's a business.
What would you do? So it would be illegal to own it but not to make it?
It would be illegal to manufacture it.
But not to own.
Exactly.
How does that have any impact? Because
if you couldn't manufacture it, there wouldn't be as many.
Well, there are tens of millions of high capacity magazines. What difference would it make? So if there are 20 million,
what, because you're
going to
get them from
million,
Russia? Is that your point? I don't understand.
I'm sorry. From Russia? No, possessed today. And I have lots of high capacity magazines. Mm. I have 140 guns. Good. If I went out and bought another gun today, would that make me more dangerous?
Maybe.
How? I can only hold one in each hand.
Yeah, listen, I'm not an expert on guns.
No, but
mine is an emotional reaction.
And I'm encouraging you to
I have to say, what would you do to stop gun violence? Let's be specific about it. In neighborhoods where that's where the 10,000 murders are. They're in Boston's, Roxbury, Dorchester. They're not in, Back Bay and Beacon Hill. What would you do?
For starters, I'd legalize drugs and take the profit out of control of the illegal market in drugs, which would end 50% of violent gun-related crime almost immediately. That's for starters. And the more dangerous the drug, as Leap
should we get
says,
that on the ballot? Do you think
I'm
people
sorry?
Would vote for that?
If it was on the ballot, you bet I would.
No, do you think the people would vote for that?
No, but marijuana's on the ballot. That's a start. Well, mm-hmm. You can't take somebody to court if you have a control a corner, and this is your corner, and you're selling nickel dime bags. You got to use force because the law will arrest you. You can't take them to court.
Yeah.
And that's what half the violent crime.
I'm not going to argue on the drug thing. I'm actually with you on that. I mean, I think we should at least try it.
Would it be worth it?
There's some other things we should try, too.
Why not? We spent $1.5 trillion on this silly war against drugs, and all we've done is militarized our law enforcement, bled this country, and there's no end in sight. We've loaded up our prisons, created a whole prison industrial complex around arresting citizens, our fellow citizens, over drugs. This is nonsensical. This is beyond nonsense.
All right.
And it does relate to the gun issue very dramatically.
I take it your next-door neighbors are not junkies, but...
They were, I'd rather that they be getting legal junk and not going to places where they have to use a gun to get it. I mean, they do that in Europe. It's not a big deal. There are plenty of functional drug users, and just like
they
have plenty
the gun
of functional
problem we have
alcoholics.
In Europe either. They don't have it. It's just non-existent.
All
right. They don't have the gun problem. All right, Richard.
No, they don't have the guns. If you don't have steps
they don't
in
have
house,
the guns.
You can't fall down.
They don't have the guns. All right, Richard Feldman, president.
Don't have cars. You won't get in car crashes.
Thanks, Richard, for joining us today. All right, if you want to listen back to our interviews about guns and gun control, that's a hot buzz phrase, I know. Head over to our website, wgbhnews.org. You can also leave us a comment or tweet us at Boston Public Radio. And I am not an expert on guns, so don't yell at me. All right, Kelly is back in the studio here at... What do you got for us?
Hey, Emily, I want to play a clip to set up our next conversation.
I didn't write the book to help us. I wrote it to help the unmarried women in this country to stop being ashamed of sex or being single. And I want them to stop behaving like mice and start behaving like men.
That was a clip from the 1964 film Sex and the Single Girl. The movie was based on the late Helen Gurley Brown's best-selling book. Emily, did you read it?
I actually did it. I actually met her once in the
70s,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you impressed?
No comment.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to look at Helen Gurley Brown's enormous cultural influence and how she was seen as a force who both liberated women and boxed them in.
That she was. Okay, Kelly, thanks.